We are the mothers of many, Kiara Evans and Lorna Blanchard. As mothers of many children, we are curious about our parenting journeys. We were called to document this poignant time of mothering in our lives. We feel passionately that women's stories should be heard. So this week, I would really, really, really love to get to the bottom of why do I want to sit in victim? Why do I want to self-sabotage? Why do I not fully want to heal? And the reason why this has come up is because, well, it's a recurring theme in my life. I see it in generally people. And I've been reading the most wonderful book recently, Lauren Fleshman. She's a runner and she's written a book called Good for a Girl. And I thought it was going to be about women in sports. And it is about women in sports, but it's also about her journey basically through fucking things up on repeat. So she's a naturally amazing runner. Then she gets injured. And she's seeing people all around her kind of going through what is now known as RED-S, which is relative energy deficiency in sport. So basically eating disorders in sports, which means that it completely ruins your body. And you end up prone to have injuries and stress fractures and amenorrhea and just all these things. And she sees other people doing it when she's in high school and she says, I'm never going to do that. And then she does it. And she does it on repeat. And kind of then gets better and then has to get better because she's got an injury, misses out on Olympic trials, misses out on this, then she'll have like a moment of brilliance where she wins something. And then she goes back to doing it again. And it's like, what is going on? Like I'm saying it not to find out about her. I'm saying it to find out about me because I find myself in that place of going, I know what the right thing to do is. I know what the healthy thing to do is. I know what the non-self-sabotage path is, but why do we want to sit in victim? Why do I want to self-sabotage? What the heck? Yeah, that's where I'm at this morning, this afternoon, wherever we are. Figure it out. I know, right? Is that too much?
I mean, you're talking to me. Am I ever going to say something's too much? It's not enough. It's never enough.
Go there. Yeah, sure. Good.
That's never enough. Okay, so I think I need some clarification on self-sabotage, please. What's your definition of self-sabotage?
Okay, for me, self-sabotage is you've got an option of what to do, and you know what the right thing to do is, or the healthy thing to do is for yourself, for your own mental health or physical health or whatever, and you do the opposite.
So when you consciously choose to do something you know is not good for you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, for example, I just ate a load of cheese and crackers for lunch. I could have made myself a salad, but I really wanted to eat the cheese and crackers, so I just ate them instead. Am I self-sabotaging, or am I just consciously choosing not to choose the best healthy option for my lunch?
Does that feel like self-sabotage?
Don't think so. I think it just feels like I fancied that for lunch, so I ate it.
So no, I wouldn't count that as self-sabotage.
I'm trying to work out where I self-sabotage in my own life.
I think maybe the places where we go into that martyr victim, that's right. For me a little bit of an take you down the path of where you might self-sabotage. Maybe before or maybe after the victim. I'm not sure which one comes first for me. Not sure.
Okay. And
yeah.
The other thing that came up was when you say fucking things up, like the woman you were describing in the book, and you included injuries in that list of things, you think potentially the choices that the way she explained it in the book is the choices that she's made ultimately then cause injuries and other things to go wrong because she's not, because she's self-sabotaged. Is that the general consensus?
Yeah. So in particular with something like Red S for athletes, the if you don't eat enough to support your training, you end up with basically brittle bones, and you are in a place where your body can't heal and recover from the training load that you're putting it under. And so then your risk of things like stress fractures and just not being able to recover from kind of niggles and in little injuries is greater. And so it's really interesting kind of reading. Why is this feeling like so ouchy for me? Is because that's where I'm at the moment. Like I'm in Red S, not as a pro athlete, but I've completely screwed up my food to the point where that's where I'm at. And I'm, and I suppose I'm sitting here slightly like feeling called out and feeling a bit like, I know all of this. I know this stuff. It's obvious you need to look after yourself. And yet it's really hard to do that. And I don't really understand why it's so hard. And like in the book, she's saying the same thing. You know, it's, she knows the science. She studied sports science. She knows it. And yet there's something underneath that's going, but maybe don't look after yourself. And it's so, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get what that thing is. What is that thing?
Does she go into in the book what her thing is? Like, does she, has she identified the root cause of why she self-sabotages?
Well, I mean, she starts the book describing her childhood, which can you, you know, you can guess. So a dad who was an alcoholic and abusive, but also was the most like loving person in her, you know, all she wanted was to please her dad. And that's a theme that follows her throughout the book. And then it's in particular in terms of sport, the pressure on women to look a particular way and maintain that and to win no matter what. It doesn't matter. And also the pressure within something like running to achieve a race weight, which is annoyingly, you can kind of cut weight and be a faster runner for a short period of time before it all implodes and you end up kind of screwing up your body so much that it doesn't work. But that short window of time, people are like, well, that's good, you know, win at that point. So I think it's all of those things in combination for her was her thing.
So the root cause being her feeling of worth.
I think value. So. Yeah, I think probably.
Does she have the language to identify that in the book, or she hasn't gone into those exact wounding?
She hasn't
terms?
Really gone into that. No, she more her angle is more the practical side of things, of kind of helping women not go through this without it. Like, it doesn't seem to really go to the root cause of things, the reasons why people are doing it. And that's what I'm really interested in this conversation. It's that we all, like, generally speaking, the science is supporting, you know, this explanation of things. And it's not specific to sport. It's anything that is a bit self-sabotaging or victim. Wanting to stay in suffering, like to choose. Is choice the right word? Do you choose that? I don't know.
Okay. I'll answer that in a sec, but like, what do you mean by the science? Sorry. So like the science of how you run and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The science of, yeah. Like, don't cause yourself harm. Right. By, you know, it's not even science. Yeah. Just don't do yourself harm in any way, shape or form, really.
So we know the basic, do we though? So this is my question. Do most people, I include myself in that. And to some extent, my answer is yes to my own question, is do we know how our body thrives the best in the conditions, or are we still very much on a path of learning what that is? Because science is all you know, there's, for me, science is laced with lots of value, but also lots of questions, like who did that research? Why did they do it? What are they getting out of it? Who funded it? What, where did that money come from, the funding money? And what have they used the money for? And like, why did they decide to research that? Why have they done that scientific experiment and that in particular, and blah, blah, blah. So my head with science is like more questions than answers, because I'm more interested in like, how do I learn how my one body thrives the best in the current economic and physical situation I find myself in. So the science is kind of by the by. I'm not a runner or anything like that, but if you're talking about everyday health in your life, so even as a runner though, I'd say it applies. So the science is there, the science that she's researched or read about or whatever, and that you have. But also, that doesn't mean that science is right for your body. Yeah, I believe that the things that go wonky are not particularly, you don't want that to happen. But I think everybody has a slightly different condition in their body that would cause those things to happen. Do you know what I mean? Like a limit, or how much food they need, or how much rest time they need, and whatever. So I'm more interested in like the individual working out what it is that they need for their particular situation.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I was thinking about just then, what was the set question? I said, I'll answer that in a second. Injuries. I can't remember what it was now.
Why do we want to sit in victimhood? Was that the question? Why do we want to be suffering?
Oh, no, you said choice. Is it always a choice?
Oh yeah, do we have choice? Are we actually choosing this?
And I say yes, always. Always,
yeah, because
a choice.
We have responsibility.
And also because, okay, so I always, always go back in my head to these, to a very extreme example of this. But you think about the Holocaust, there were people who survived the Holocaust by choosing to not let their situation overcome them. Like there are stories that people have written down and told where they sat in that suffering and they chose every single day to not give in, as want of a better phrase, to the situation they were in. So even in that like extreme, that's the most extreme condition a person, a human being could be put under, right? That's like the example of like, you couldn't take away more of someone's conditions to have a shit life. Then I think Esther Perel talks about this a lot with her parents. They then use that situation that they were in to create lives beyond that. And even in that situation where they didn't live in a complete state of victimhood, because what, like that is the obvious path to go on, isn't it? When you're in that situation, like the first thing you want to do is be a victim to it.
Yeah. But so what's the magic? Like what is going on for that person who is in the most horrific of situations and goes, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm going to survive. I'm going to live. I'm going to choose to live in this moment. And someone who's going, no, I want to still suffer. Like that's the bit that's fascinating me at the moment. I'm just so curious as to know, where's that flick of a switch in the brain? Like what's the thing that's making that choice to me seem impossible? And to give context, what I mean is, to recover from Red S, as much as you're kind of saying, yeah, you need to like figure out what's right for you as opposed to just kind of blindly following the science. Like, I'm not blindly following the science. The science is pretty obvious that if you have Red S, there are things that you can do, should do, probably need to do to prevent certain things from happening. Mm-hmm. Why am I not doing that? Why am I not doing it? Why didn't she do it? Or why did she repeatedly, like Lauren Fleshman in this book, why does she repeatedly do the same thing to cause injury after injury after injury cycle? You'd think, like, when do you learn the lesson? When am I going to learn the goddamn lesson? I don't get it. Like, and it feels so hard, and I don't understand why my brain won't allow me to just do the quote-unquote right thing for my own health. This is feeling very open. I feel very raw about this today, and I'm not quite sure why. Maybe it's from reading the book. I don't know. But just, yeah.
Maybe some people never learn the lesson.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't mean that's you, but I mean, like, we're all given opportunities to learn lessons every single day, all the time. Like, whether you choose to learn them or not is, what's that dependent on? Like, many things dependent on, like, what place you're in that day. Like, the days when you stay in victim longer are the days when the conditions of your humanity aren't optimum, I guess. Like, you've not slept, eaten, whatever. That's going to have an effect on it. But these are day-to-day decisions, aren't they? Like, daily moments of choice. You have choice every single second of every day how you're going to behave. Like, I can choose now to end this call, or I can choose to have this conversation, or I can choose to, like, spend my afternoon shouting at my kids, or I can choose to spend my afternoon connecting with my kids. We have those, literally, we have, even people who feel like they don't have a lot of choice have choice. We do have choices of how we spend our time. Lots of, like, if you listen to interviews of people who've come from quote unquote nothing and built $1 billion empires, whatever, they'll say it was through choice, through saying, I don't subscribe to how I was brought up and I'm going to choose different. I'm going to work through the pain. I'm going to work through the hardship. I'm going to, like, face that head on to get where I want to be. That, like, intense determination to be successful at something, I guess, like, overcame their need to sit in the victimhood of where they came from. That's not saying, like, every single person is going to be that way, because I don't think some of us are designed that way. I think our journeys are more nuanced than that. Like, it's not just I've got to get there, so I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to get there. That's like a very specific goal, isn't it? To get to, have you set your goal as being, I am going to change this? Have you set that goal, or is it just something, just because you know information doesn't mean?
I think that's the thing. I think, like, you know, to, like, the real honest answer is, that's the bit I'm confused about. Like, the obvious answer is you set the goal of health. And I am self-sabotaging that. Mm-hmm. I am literally looking at the goal of health and going, nah, what the heck? That's ridiculous. Like, what the heck is going on there? And it's like, why self-sabotage? Why am I looking at what is essentially a pretty basic goal of just health and going, nah?
So what you're saying is you don't know what is stopping you from making the choice to say, I'm prioritizing my health no matter how scared I am. Yeah. That is what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And not just that I'm not prioritizing health, but that I'm specifically prioritizing unhealth.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's so
bonkers.
Do you have fear about setting that as health? Like, do you have fear about setting the goal of health?
I have fears around what healing it might look like. And I think that's part of, but it feels like that's not enough of the answer, almost, like that there's something deeper that I can't quite access as to why, what are the benefits of sitting in self-sabotage and sitting in victim? Like, what is it that's keeping me from wanting to stay there as opposed to stay in the, yay, we've got this camp. That's it. I don't think I'm special in that. I think, you know, I see it in a few friends of mine who sit in, like, victim. That, you know, it's, I see it in my kids even, of, like, almost when some, you know, I mean, Luke's a classic, he's a great example, like, the tiniest cut, I think I said it on the podcast, but the tiniest cut, and it's like a big deal. But it's like almost like luxuriating in an injury. Like, what is that about? Is it attention? Is it then you're getting value? Is it that that's where you're getting worth from and love? And, like, what the heck is it? Why do we like being in there?
I think like you can trick yourself into thinking that you're getting value from that. I think it feels like that's what you're getting from it. I don't think that's true. Because if you do the opposite, like say you're not sitting in victim and you move yourself out of it, you realize the value is in the peace of not being in it. But I think it's like scratching an itch, isn't it? If it comes up of like, I'm going to wallow in this. Okay, so what do I wallow in? I'm not a massive... Okay, so on this particular thing, I don't think I stay in victim anymore in the current situation I am in for a long time anymore. I don't think I wallow there like I used to. I feel like that I know now that I'm about to be a victim to this and I can see it coming and I quickly move myself out of it. That's how I feel. I used to be a victim to, I don't know. I'm trying to think before I started doing work where I was more aware of myself. I would be a victim about the house I lived in or like the situation I had with my kids. Like, oh, they don't sleep. I'm going to wallow in this misery of this because it's not fair because my kid sleeps less than your kid or whatever. And that's not fair because I haven't had enough sleep. And of course, your life's easier because your husband's home at 5 p.m. or whatever. And like, I would stay in that victimhood of like, I cannot relieve myself of this situation because of the circumstances I find myself in, rather than saying, ah, okay, like you're looping around this thought of like you're a victim in this. Where can you make a change to mean that you don't feel that way anymore? Like you can't necessarily change what time your kids wake up, but you can change how you feel about like how you look after yourself and how you feel about that for the rest of the day, because you're not going to change it. That's the time they wake up. You can put in place like X, Y, and Z to hope they don't wake up at 5 a.m. But you can't actually like stop that from happening. That is just the situation you're in. So how can you be at more peace with this? And there's some days where I'm not at peace with it. I want to have a good old flaming moan about it for a lot of the day about how tired I am and how it's not fair, instead of just doing the thing I know I need to do, which is like go for a nap.
Yeah.
And some, you know, on the good days, you say, okay, well, today then I'm going to take it a bit slower. I'm going to eat this because I know it's going to make me less tired rather than more tired. I'm not going to eat all the carbs, or I'm not going to. And some days, like, you go the opposite way and you do eat all the carbs and you do like wallow in the misery of it all. And there's two different ways you can tackle the same situation. One is the victim and one is one of freedom from that victimhood. Choice, like having options. And I think in the modern time, in lots of ways, we have too many options. Because when I think about, not that I want to go back to any former time, but it used to be that you were very constricted to what you could choose, even like going to the supermarket, right? You would have been, the choice would have been, do you want carrots or parsnips for your dinner? Because that's what grows in the field down the road. Now you go to the shop and you're like, would you like carrots or parsnips are still there, but you also have like this flown in from here and this flown in from here. And you have the choice of maybe like 40 different vegetables that you could cook for your dinner. And you're supposed to make an informed health choice about which one of those to pick, right? Like, how do you pick one?
Yeah, I think what's terrifying me in this conversation a little bit is knowing, like, I've written down choice, I think, 5 or 6 times, but actually I am exercising my right to choose.
Yeah. And you're choosing to do it the way you want to do it right now, whilst knowing that that's not the best thing for your body.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, what is, I guess maybe the question is, what need am I fulfilling for myself by choosing the unhealthy path?
There must be suffer.
The need. Yeah. So what's that about? Why do we want to suffer?
Why are you choosing to suffer?
Yeah.
Why are you choosing to suffer? Only you can answer that question. that's a big question though. Do you want to ask yourself that yet? Are you ready to ask yourself that question? Because sometimes it's a case of not being ready to ask the question and hearing the answer.
Oh, the thing that pisses me off about this is that I feel like I do know the answer. And it's because there is in me deep pain. And it's like, if I can identify externally with the suffering, a suffering, almost doesn't matter what suffering, then that pain can be kind of exorcised out of my mind and my body. And what really is pissing me off about this at the moment is that I feel like I'm doing the work. So why am I still coming back to, I feel deep pain? What, how can I alleviate the deep pain when, for all intents and purposes right now, my life is brilliant? Like, not wanting to brag, I have a great life. My family are awesome. My husband is amazing. I do a job that I create myself and I love. We're okay. You know, like, I'm okay. And yet inside me, there is this deep pain. And if I could just suffer, then that pain has an outlet. Does that, and that sounds so like woe is me and pathetic. And I'm struggling with that. But that's probably the truth. That's the reason why I choose to suffer, is to go, something hurts in me and it's going to come out in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like sometimes it's habitual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where's, maybe it's what I was beautifully preaching last week on the podcast of what can we do right now, of trying to come back to the present moment. And it's literally, like you just said, choosing victimhood or freedom. Which one do you want to choose in an everyday moment?
Yeah, I'm being okay with the fact that you might choose victimhood.
Oh, interesting.
Like, it's like, if you want to pick that, that's a choice, a valid choice. Because you're like, so you just said you're experiencing deep pain, right? Well, do you want to let that out right now? Do you want to see it? Do you want to like give it some light? Do you want to go there? Do you want to like make friends with it? Do you want to like ask it where it comes from and what it's seen and use it?
I think on a surface level, I'm instantly going, but I know all the answers to those questions. I know where it's all come from. And the deeper answer is no, thank you.
Because my other question is like, what would, if, so say you saw it, you heard it and you valued it and you like brought it into your life and embraced it all, what if it, are you would you be happy if it told you to change some things?
No. That's interesting. That's really interesting. So there is a deeper need when we kind of go to victim and wanting to sit in suffering. There is some kind of deeper need that is probably not being met there. And here's the thing, my whole, I'm doing the work, she says with inverted commas, maybe is needs to be at some point deeper. There's a choice there.
But also the work you are doing is still very valid, because say you go to the deep place of the pain, all the work you do now teaches you the tools to, you know, regulate yourself.
Okay. And
it's important. I still think all that, like, so say you're reading books, for example, if that's your method of choice, and you're gathering all this like logical information. Like, you can talk to me about science all day, right? Like, I'm gathering this, it's all in here, it's all up here. Like, I'm just circling around my head. This is the logical brain.
Yeah.
Okay. Until you go to the place that screams at you from the depths of your body and says, this is the bit I want you to listen to. Like, that stuff up there is just surface level to me. That's just...
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you've hit the nail on the head.
It doesn't mean that we can't. I think logical reasoning is, like, I read somewhere on Instagram, I think, like, that logical reasoning to soothe trauma is still a valid response to a traumatic trigger. Because
it just doesn't generally work to solve the whole thing.
Maybe it doesn't for some, you know, I mean, if you're talking about deep, deep, dark pain that is still lurking, that doesn't necessarily want to come up in this particular moment, then maybe it's just not the right moment for it.
Yeah, and actually that invites a shit ton of compassion, which I think would be helpful for the pain to kind of go, actually, rather than saying I'm choosing victimhood and now I'm going to feel real shame about it, like lump shame onto myself, which is not helpful, to go, oh, you're choosing victim today. That, okay, that probably needs a bit of compassion rather than shitting on the moment of choosing victim. And maybe that's even true, like with your example earlier on of, you know, a mum who's not slept. You want to go and sit and wallow in that because you've not slept. Well, yeah, of course. That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm. But there's a difference between, like, there's a difference between being a, like, so for example, in that situation of the mother, I know I was guilty of this and probably still am sometimes, of just projecting that all over other mothers. Like, oh, it's so fucking hard for me. Like, I need you to give me attention about this thing or whatever. Rather than the conversation I would have now of, like, I had a really shit night. I'm owning that. But, like, can you just make me a cup of tea, please? You know, like, there's a difference between this, like, I want to suck you into my victimhood of, like, be here in my journey with me and my victim. Like, come in, come and join me here. It's great. Like, this is okay. So this is a bit of a tangent, but this is how I feel sometimes about collective groups of women. And I think this is to do with the sister wound or the mother wound. I don't know which wound, but there's a wound coming up here. And it's like, come and join me in the victim. Let's all moan about school. Come here and moan about school with me because you have friends here and we can be a victim about this. We can complain about this school till the cows come home and do nothing about it because it's safe here. It's nice here because we're all collectively agreeing about this, like, awful thing.
All right, so yeah, tell me more about that. That's fascinating. I love the idea of this not being just about, like, individual issues. What the idea of a sister wound or like those kind of things, and that's new stuff for me. I've only recently, like in the last few months, I think you've mentioned it and Dawn's mentioned it, but that fascinates me, the idea of like these bigger things that almost collectively we're dealing with. What like, yeah, that's okay, interesting. So tell me more.
Before I go into that, one thing I thought of as well was about discomfort. Okay, so you, for me, any change I've made out of victimhood is because I've been so uncomfortable with my behavior or my response to something that I cannot no longer behave or respond like that, and I make a change. And I think until you are too uncomfortable to sit in that victim or that self-sabotage, when you are so aware that it's going to create something you don't want to do, it might not be the right time to change it. Like, sometimes discomfort is the only driver.
Yeah, but that pisses me off as well, because, and I agree with you, but that's really annoying, because it's like that, you know, reading in the book of her going, I'm going to do all the things that I shouldn't be doing. Oh no, look, I've got a stress fracture. Like, okay, the path is open for me to literally go down that road. I'd really rather not go down that road. And yet I'm like on the one hand going, I don't want to go down that road. And on the other hand going, I'm going to go down that road. Look, watch me. Fucking watch me. I'm off. Like, what the hell? Anyway.
Isn't that the most annoying thing about doing work, though? Because you suddenly become aware of your patterns and go, damn it. Ah, god damn it.
Yeah, the patterns are so stupid. Yeah, like, I can literally be doing something, and whilst I'm doing it, I'm going, fuck's sake, this is ridiculous. I'm going to carry on doing it, but this is ridiculous. What the heck? Yeah, interesting.
I mean, having, like, my sister staying with me at the moment, and she's a manifester, and my second daughter's a manifester, which, if you're into human design, will bring up some stuff for you. And it's like, I spent ages talking to her about it, about the certain like things that you experience as a manifestor and why it might feel different for you in different situations, whatever. And then literally spent the weekend being annoyed with Fern for being a manifestor. And whilst telling her off for doing things because she's overtired, overexcited, like it's all too much. And it's that usual thing that me and her go through, that same freaking pattern that her and I have, where she's too overstimulated and I just want to beat her down so that she's like not doing the things and having the big emotions. Like, I'm just repeating every pattern and I can feel myself doing it. It comes out my mouth. I'm like, oh yeah, there we go. Just repeated that again. And like, it doesn't, like, I can sit with that now and be a victim about it. I often, some, like in the past, once I've had experiences with my family and we've all been together, where I'm then beat myself up for 3 days about the way I've behaved. And this time I was like, okay, well, we're with our family of origin, like all five of us in one house. That's a big deal. Like, to, and instantly your whole body responds in the way that your childhood did, because you're with those people and you're then battling in some ways against how you want to respond to things versus how you, how your body needs to respond to them and how you want to respond to them. So my body needs to respond in that way because it instantly is triggered into, oh, you're in your family of origin, like do this. And then my logic and my work and all of that kicks in and goes, right, just breathe here, because that's not about being an adult of 37. That's about being a child of five. But
yeah, you know. I think there's something in there actually. In almost, you kind of go, I'm going to identify as a victim, and therefore all of the patterns I'm going to repeat are the ones that a victim would do. Or I could say, I don't know, can you fake it till you make it in this almost? Could you say, right, when you said patterns, it made me go, oh, that's literally the point. Like, our brains are wired to do the same thing over and over and over again, and to break that and to rewire your brain is actually really hard. And I think that's the thing that I often think about with all of this stuff, is it takes so much energy. You've almost got to do it when you're in a really good place to kind of go, right, today I'm going to try a new pattern. I'm going to try and it's, to me, it literally, it's like fake it till you make it, where you've got to go, well, here are the two options, and today I'm just going to do the other option. And if you can do it enough times, then maybe you create a new pattern, right? Like, it's just about, I say just, creating a new pattern. But yeah, but at the same time, we're saying, actually, the old patterns, of course, they're right there to fall back into, because they're your patterns forever. Mm.
I mean, you already do the ultimate thing in that, and that you've gone from someone who couldn't run at all, who can now run like a ridiculous amount of time. Like, that is the ultimate in choosing a different way of being. Because I sure as shit can't run that far. And I make absolutely no active choice to be more active every day. My pattern is set of, like, I enjoy the odd little walk, but I am not going to choose physical activity.
And this is where all of the work and stuff that we've talked about in the past and the things that you can do needs to be a regular thing, like the kind of supporting your mental health and supporting the self-care and all of the things, so that you've got the inner strength to choose the other pattern on a daily basis. And maybe I'm coming to you today having read that book and probably going, maybe I'm just a bit tired, maybe I'm just a bit, I've neglected some of that stuff. And so then it's very easy then to be fully invested in being a victim to my own self-sabotage. And actually, it's just a case of needing a reminder every now and then of, there are choices. What have you let slip? What have you let slide to mean that your inner strength has gone, when actually creating new patterns is really, really, really hard. I think maybe so much of like stuff that one reads in books or sees on, you know, social media of people who've gone through big transitions, is you get to see their big transition. Ta-da, I've done it. And actually you don't see all of like these days, like my day today, where I'm going, I'm trying to do the work and actually I've forgotten what that means. I've kind of forgotten what I've got to do. I don't know what I'm doing. And the point is to not keep going down the same pattern, but to try a new pattern. And that's really hard. It's just hard. Maybe that's, yeah. And you've got to keep doing the things to look after you to be able to do that, maybe.
And maybe what some of the days are just recognizing that and doing the things that look after you rather than trying to fix the problem.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So when it comes to like, you know, like your daily practices of what lights you up or whatever, you know, like having those little things in, because even though the bigger picture is hard, the smaller picture can still be ticking along.
Yeah.
And I think the forming new pathways thing, it's a time related situation often, because the patterns you're undoing are ones that have been built up over a very long time most of the time. But how often have you and I got here with food, right, in our families? How often have you and I got to that point where you're like, fuck it, our diets are shit, we need to sort this out, and gone, well, now we're doing this and so-and-so's having this and I'm doing this and I'm buying these and I don't want to do it. And like, how often have we gone down the victimhood of that, of like, oh, it's just because I don't have this and I can't do that and I don't have whatever. And now we see it as like, I think the conversations we have more recently are like, oh, I've noticed that this is happening and we're having this conversation, or we're putting this in place to make a change, because we don't sit in the victim of it now. We go, this is happening. Okay. Well, it's probably not as much of a trigger anymore for us because we've worked on it. And actually we know it's not all going to fall to shit because they've eaten badly for a week. And we go, right, well, there's some work to do here. And then we just tackle it without that emotional investment of chaos or giving it fuel.
Giving it fuel. I like that visualization of, again, there's an element of choice, isn't there? Yeah, yeah, the victim. The victim in me is going, come on, let's go down. And I can go, oh, I'm not going to give you any fuel today.
Because today you're openly raw emotionally, and you could give that some fuel because it will take you down the victim and you can wallow in it all day and like really get down there in some good victimhood behaviors. Yeah, so
when should you? What, you know, when should you? I guess maybe it's too nuanced to come up with a guideline of these are the emotions that you should go down and figure out, these are the emotions that you don't need. Like, it's interesting, isn't it? Maybe the answer is more obvious than that. I know when I'm wanting to go down in victimhood. I know when it's an unhealthy choice to make. Therefore, that one is one that there's a blanket rule of, we don't give that one flame. We don't give that one any fuel. It is obvious, really, isn't it? Maybe I'm trying to create rules and nuance when actually there doesn't need to be rules and nuance. There just needs to be a bit of self-responsibility and a bit of self-sovereignty and kind of going, get a grip. Come on, well, don't do that one.
That's the point. Like, you make your own rules for you because you trust you to make them. It's your rules because it's your body.
That's interesting, because I would say I don't trust me and my body.
Which is why you want to relate your story to the runner in the book and look for the answer, because if she's found the answer, you can copy the answer for her. Sorry, is that a bit too much?
No, I mean, yes, because ouch. But sorry. Also, what's funny? No, it's totally fine. What's so funny is that over the last couple of weeks, there's been a whole bunch of these things that have kind of come up and gone, Chiara, you really need to sort this stuff out, you know, with books and podcasts and whatever. And I was listening to one, Running Explained, I think it was, and they were talking about diet and hormones and all that kind of stuff. Really interesting. And then, and I was like, right, I better go and book in with that nutritionist. And CJ was like, but why? Because you know what the answer is. You know what you need to do. Why do you want to go and spend it? It was going to be like about £900. He was like, why? Why? Are you going to listen to that person? I was like, yeah, because then I can abdicate responsibility. I can show someone my everything. Like, here's my running diary. Here's my food diary. Here's all the things. I've got it for like the last 3 years. Here it all is. Now, please tell me what I need to do specifically to me, not what I know I need to do, which is really basic. You know, how about just eat when you're hungry and don't when you're full? Or even like, figuring it out based on calculators online. Like, I won't even take that. I need some. It's interesting, isn't it? I just like to abdicate all responsibility. Yeah.
Well, not all responsibility. Like, you don't do that. We're talking about this one specific thing.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
it's come up for you and you've gone, oh, that's big for me. Like, this is very human, isn't it? To go, I don't want to do it alone. I don't want to do this alone because that means I have to, because, you know, we want to connect with each other and not be alone, because being alone is quite a scary place to be. But when it comes for me personally, when it comes down to like the very specific choices I make for my body and my health, I very much want to make them just for me because only I can feel my body and what it's going through. When it comes down to other things, I would definitely want to employ someone to help me with that.
Like what?
So for example, in the past, I would say that if something's come up with parenting, often I've like gone down the route of like, right, I'm going to find out the solution to this, because if I read all these parenting books, I will find the solution. They've done it like that and they've got like their kids fine or whatever. And then I've gone down that route, read all the books and realized actually, as much as I still love reading the books and experiencing their stories, they're not in my life. They're not with my kids. They don't have my children. They don't have the same exact setup as me. I have to make that decision for myself. So I can get little tidbits from them, but the ultimate like big decision making is down to me, because they can't be me in my life. That's the absolute like joy of being a human being. This is your experience. I get to do it how I want to do it.
That's really interesting, because what you said, only I can feel my body. What's it going on in my body? I think I've got real distrust of my own body, of the facts that are presented to me by my body. I don't believe them.
Like, so when your body breaks from running, you don't believe that it's broken?
No.
Even if it's showing you that it's broken and it hurts? Or do you just ignore it more than you don't want to believe it?
Both. I guess maybe one... Maybe this is something that needs to... Maybe this is one of those elements of pain that I need to kind of put to rest. But when I was... before we had Anna, I was pregnant and had random bleeding, went to the hospital on my own because CJ was looking after Samuel because he was very little at the time, absolutely fully convinced that I was going to walk into that scan room and everything was going to be fine and it was just going to be random bleeding, and it wasn't fine. And I think that completely robbed me of trust in my body, because I was so convinced that everything was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. It was the ultimate opposite of not okay. I think that's probably one of those moments of kind of going, I don't trust my body. I don't trust it when it sends me pain signals, because I don't know whether or not my brain is then going to make the right assessment of that pain signal.
Yeah. I think this is just this feels like the beginnings of you discovering how to make the change you want to make. And like, I think it's okay to go, you know, I think it's important that you're going through all of these different excavations of like things that have happened before and things that you can still feel now, because that's the thing, isn't it? It's not uncomfortable enough to make the change, whatever that change may be that you want to make.
But yeah.
I think it's important to still go through what led you to this point, though, as well.
Mm.
If that's helpful to you, like, that was a big thing that happened that changed your perspective on your body. Well, it's a big thing. So we'll sit with the big thing for now of what happened. And I think sometimes on the journey of, if we want to call it healing, whatever, on the journey of like self-awareness, we sometimes want to fast track because we know that the end place can be more restful and peaceful. And like you said, everything is feeling so good right now. And you've had this high of like a shift in yourself and you're enjoying it. And then you're like, ah, why is this thing come back up? Like, why am I?
I know, right? Yeah. What the hell is that about? Could that, why is not the path to healing and peace linear?
Yeah.
That annoys me.
Yeah. Because we all want to feel good all the time. Like we all want to feel at peace with ourselves all the time. And I don't know if that state is possible. I think it is. I think sometimes it comes later in life, or I think sometimes it comes because of the situation you're in. I don't know, it's every person's different, but I think we want to be in that place all the time. But whether we can be, or you know, whether we actually do the work to be in that place, and I say do the work, sometimes it just doesn't happen. Sometimes we just can't get in that place all the time. But it's frustrating if you're trying to push it, and if you're trying to push something, it's not gonna, to me, that's not going to necessarily make the change you want to change, because you're pushing against what feels natural right now. And maybe what's natural right now is self-reflection and unpicking of things so that you can eventually see them from a different perspective.
So that's so interesting as well. How can one sit in the reality of the fact that you can have this, I guess, this kind of pain, what, you know, for whatever reason, and at the same time kind of go, life's okay? How can it be that you can have those two realities without one invalidating the other? And maybe I'm thinking too black and white again, but it definitely feels like that sometimes, that almost I need to either sit in victimhood to validate the pain, or I need to ignore the victimhood, shame the victimhood, shame the suffering. I want to go down to feel the pain, to excavate the pain, because life's okay. And if I feel any pain, that's invalidating the okayness of my life. That feels difficult as well. Yeah, and so then it feels very like yo-yo-y. Yeah, like I've got to do one or the other to the extreme.
Yeah, rather than have them both just ticking along together.
Yeah, which is actually life, right? And do you know what? Yeah. Actually, I heard, I was listening to a podcast this morning, obviously on a run, and she said that rather than doing a gratitude list, she does a grief and gratitude list, which I thought was quite a good idea. Maybe that's something I'll try, to acknowledge that those two things are in tandem.
And not you're doing necessarily... it right now. Like you're doing it right now. Like you're here recording this, doing your life, and there's that element of that deep pain still there. We are doing it all the time. Like, and you can, and sometimes I feel like you're going along and you can feel it there, the like temptation of going down the pit of doom, as I like to call mine, the pit of doom of like, you know, your life shit, just go and hide in there for a bit. And I can feel the pit of doom calling me in, and then something will happen. Like, I don't know, a kid will do something funny or whatever, and I'm suddenly not in the pit of doom. And I'm like, okay, I can stay in this place for a bit. And then the pit of doom will come back of like, oh, come and join me. And it's not, you know, I just don't think it's realistic necessarily to like think that, it's not realistic for me to think that that pit of doom will disappear. And I don't think I want it to, because that reminds me of like the other side of things where you can experience like intense joy.
Yeah, maybe that is actually the beauty of, that, like, that is that healing? Is that the thing? Is to kind of go, rather than getting rid of the pit of doom, it's to simply be living life, the shades of whatever it is, of both up and down. Like, I think you're so right that, you know, last night, me, Anna and Bethany were in absolute hysterics, like proper hysterics, just putting Anna to bed over something just so silly. And you're absolutely right. Like, those moments of complete blissful joy exist. They do.
Yeah. But I think as women, we often have come up against that thing of like, well, I can't possibly be experiencing all this joy when I haven't got these ducks in a row.
Yes, exactly. How dare I get joy when? da-da-da-da-da.
Yep.
Yeah, it's that's the voice often for me. How dare you feel good? How dare you?
Or for me, like, how dare... So something that comes up for me is rage that I've referenced before on here. Like, when I've experienced rage and I've projected that onto my kids or my husband, how dare I then be peaceful afterwards? Because I've spoiled all of this for these.
Are you allowed to?
And because I can now snap out of it quite quickly, I go, oh, that was rage. Hello, rage. Where did you come from? Like, nice to meet you again. Oh, okay, let's go apologize to all the people you projected that rage onto. Go around, say the sorries. And then still that niggle of like, oh, now I'm going to be peaceful. And they're all going to have like got the remnants of my rage in them. So, but, you know, ultimately, that's not my problem. Like, that's their problem, but they're kids, so that's a bit different for the kids. But,
yeah,
you know,
it's kind of your problem as well. Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
But for Gary, obviously, like, he's an adult. So, yes, I experienced rage, and yes, I repaired it. And I could sit in the victimhood of self-sabotage and self-flagellation, and you're a shit person, and you shouldn't experience any more joy for the rest of the day, and punish yourself now because you've been mean. Or... right, let's recover from this and move on with our day, because actually if I can now shift this mood, which I've already shifted in myself for everybody else as well, by just being joyful, because now I've expressed my rage, I do want to feel joy, that's going to be better, right, than me self-flagellating all day.
And I think it's that flick of the switch that I feel like I need to access, that kind of how to switch up the... not necessarily sometimes the mead in the house for me, but I may be quite guarded with my own sadness around the kids or anger around the kids, the personal choices. Yeah, how can I kind of go, okay, I was doing that, now I'm going to do something else. Flick the switch.
We do it all the time. You just maybe you do it all the time. Just today, maybe you're not seeing it clearly because...
yeah.
You're feeling like the other feeling is taking over, the victimhood feeling is taking over, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But you, on a normal day,
I can do this.
Sit here and talk about all the ways that we make better choices for our family than ourselves.
Yeah, let's do that next week. We'll talk about all the good choices that one can make. Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So this is just going to be a snapshot, a moment in time of today. Is really hard to flick that switch.
Yep.
And later on or tomorrow might be different, and actually that maybe that's the flick of the switch for me. Like, it's inviting in a little bit of self-compassion of in this moment I can't find the fucking switch, it's too dark.
And we're gonna like, and the sitting in that space doesn't mean we have to go down the route of self-sabotage and like self-flagellation for days and days and days. This is just, like you say, a moment in time where that's happening. And it might pass tomorrow, it might pass tonight, it might pass next minute after this conversation. You don't know. Like, that's the way it is sometimes.
I think fighting it is maybe part of my issue. Like,
keeps
fighting
it going longer. That's the fuel. You're giving
that's
it the fuel.
rather than kind of just
acceptance.
Watching it. Yeah, accepting whatever feeling comes up. Maybe I'm trying to control it at the same time as then going, well, I'm going to control it, but the only choice I've got to control it is to do that. No, there is, different control or choice.
Yeah. Oof, big day for you.
Yeah, I think I've had too much caffeine, maybe.
Shall I briefly, like, go, shall I just say about the sister wound, mother
wound? Oh, yeah, please do. I'm so curious about this.
Okay, so my understanding of collective wounds now, anyone out there knows more about this, please feel free to write in on a postcard too.
please actually do. I love postcards. Yeah.
So do I. So my experience of it is how I feel it through myself, right? Like everything. So for me, something like a collective sister wound is bitchiness. Women gathering to gossip about other people. And a collective wound is something that has happened, developed over time because of experiences of a collective group of people. So for me, the sister wound massively links to the witch trials and any situations where women were killed mainly for their beliefs, and when they gathered together were seen as a threat. So if, you know, there's been lots of periods of in history where women gathering has not been allowed, or it's been seen as a threat because they practice certain things that then were perceived as witchcraft or whatever. And over time and over time, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, no, so why then, so if women are, when they gather together, they feel that historical, somewhere in their bodies, that historical kind of persecution of women, why does the, how does that then translate to something like bitchiness or gossip amongst, towards one another? Like, what's going on there? That's interesting to me.
Why that then, why they then see other women as a threat?
Yeah.
Now, I would say it was like not being in the collective mindset makes you a threat to the group. You're like a rogue. So if they're, if you're not on board with their way of thinking, you're a rogue person who may threaten the group of them and that, and what they've got together. That's how I see it. Like if women want to take you down, it's because, like, say it's a bitchy circle of people and they really want to like lay into you about your choices or whatever. It's because in some way they feel threatened by what you stand for or what you believe in, I think. Or jealousy of someone's situation, judgment. All of these things are to do with fear, though, aren't they? They're all the common theme of that is fear behind it, behind all those actions. So if you're judgmental about a situation, it's because you're scared, you're fearful of what that might mean for you if you tolerate that person or their behavior. It might mean that you have to self-reflect, which most people, like if you're not on the path of self-reflection, find very uncomfortable if you're not open to that. The mother wound, I find that more difficult to. The sister wound, I feel like I have done a lot of work on myself because I very much had experiences that have led me to distrust circles of women, and then had quite a lot of male experiences rather than women friends. And then over the last few years have gathered women together and myself been part of those groups because I've now worked on my own stuff to do with it. So I kind of understand it a bit more, like why women want to gather that way. Whereas with the mother wound, I'm not too sure myself, to be honest with you. I think I need to do some more research onto that.
The mother wound being like not being able to be mothered, or mothering going wonky? I
don't know. Is that linked to martyrdom as well? The mother wound? No, I don't know either. So that's something that I need to have a look into, really. But the sister wound, I feel more connected with, and I can see it now playing out, especially in group gatherings of women, like on the school run, for example. I can see the sister wound in action of like, let's gather and together in groups where we feel safe. And if someone is doing something different to our belief system, we can then take them down. And that doesn't look like physically taking them down, but you can see them ostracize people and gossip about them and, like, you know, form these groups where there's no, everyone's in it together because there's safety in numbers, rather than being open to have one's own opinions about things and it being okay. Like the circles of women I gather in, we have our own opinions. That is safe, that is welcome, and that is very much celebrated.
Yeah. And so what's coming up for me with that is that it just feels so sad that if it, you know, the sister wound is kind of from that historical distrusting of circles of women, that then the healing, or is it like the antithesis of that, would be to gather in these groups of women and have all of these opposing opinions and not be horrible to each other about it, because that's the that would be healing, right? Rather than to kind of repeat the history, but amongst ourselves now. That's sad. But then I don't mix with people where there's lots of gossip, I suppose.
I think as well, those gatherings, the healing gatherings, can only happen when everyone attending the gathering is open to seeing themselves and owning themselves in that situation and everything they say and do.
And then it's, you know, when you're saying it comes from a place of fear, I think when we know when we're coming from a place of fear, like I know actually almost all of this conversation is about coming from a place of fear, some kind of fear that needs addressing. And then when we can kind of figure that out, there's a whole, and actually even approach other people with that knowledge of there's a fear here. This isn't about whatever's going on. It's about a fear that's being unmet, like that we aren't looking after this fear. Yeah.
I mean, every single person that I know and that I've come across in my life has been conditioned to act from a place of fear. We all unless you live in some kind of utopian bubble, the system we live under thrives on our fear, because if we are scared to tune into our intuition and make our own decisions, we are going to buy into a system that thrives on us being a bit scared of our own power. Is that a bit much? We can cut that.
No, I don't think that's too much at all. All I can think is how empowering that is. Like, that feels like, you know, that's another one of those things I want printed on my wall of, and that almost feels like the element of choice. Like, when you acknowledge that almost the fear that I'm experiencing, which I relate just to me and my little life, is so much bigger than that. We're conditioned, this whole system, this whole way family is, the whole way school is, the whole way society is in general is about fear. Hold on, I don't want to identify with that. And the only way of me almost fighting that system is to go, I don't want to be a victim of that fear then. Mm-hmm. And here's my choice. Like, that feels really empowering actually as a choice. So I like it. I don't think it's too much at all. Amen, sister. That's how it feels to me. Like, that feels really.
Yeah.
So do you have like red flags? Do you have things that you can kind of pinpoint and go, oh, hi, victim. What are your red flags? That's interesting.
Yes. Grass is greener behaviors, like, oh, well, they've got this or they've got that, or, oh, you're feeling like, so if I like start to compare my life with somebody else's, like, oh, they've just got this. So, you know, of course they've got this because they've got that. And I start comparing myself or like experiencing others' lives through my own filter. Like, hold on, you don't know anything about their life, Lorna. Like, you just think that their life is better because you've seen this shiny thing on the surface and you're not actually thinking about why you're feeling shit. You just want to like justify your feeling shit by looking at something else, you know. What else is a red flag for me victim wise? Like starting to go down the route of being annoyed at everybody about little things, and I know that I need to either get some alone time in or some rest or an early night or whatever it is, just little behaviors that are my tells where I see them coming a bit more. Or if I'm not wanting to engage with certain people in my life because I know they're going to tell me the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, you don't want to talk to that person today because you know they're going to say it to you how it is or whatever. So yeah, lots of little things.
Well,
it's a progress, good. Work in progress, oh, we are.
Work in progress, but not linear.
Not linear, sorry.
Just a general work.
I know you would like it to be linear, but in my experience, it's not been. And I think in your experience, it hasn't been either. Because we know when it was linear, we weren't that happy. You know, like we were happy, but we weren't experiencing, you know, some of the real joys of mothering. We weren't. Like when it was linear, we weren't experiencing the pure joy that can be mothering, were we?
Nope.
And just are we now
plowing through? Yeah, no, we were just I'll speak for myself. I was just plowing through the next thing, the next thing, the next thing.
Me too.
On that linear path. Yeah, interesting. Me
too. I was just plowing through and now I'm not on the linear path. I'm experiencing it all and some of it is nicer than other bits. But But I think that, you know, I think both of us have that task ahead of like understanding and feeling the benefit of the times that aren't the best. I think we're still at that stage of like, this is here, it's here to teach us something, but we're not quite ready to embrace it yet. We're just on that precipice of learning to embrace the darker times.